Sourcing Matters Podcast. This is your host, Aaron Niederhumann, sharing stories of our food. And welcome back to Sourcing Matters. This is your host, Aaron Niederhumann. Today, I'm joined by my good friend and confidant, Renee Vaslios. Hey, Renee, how you doing?
Hi, it's wonderful to be back, Aaron.
You made it today by the skin of your teeth.
I did, yes.
You made it, though. You're here.
Yes, so happy to be here.
Beautiful day in Bosstown.
We had a wild storm yesterday, so it is a day with streets littered with trees.
Yeah, trees down, on cars, all over the place, right? Big twisting storms. Forget this whole global warming thing, right? Overrated. Hey, Renee, a little bit about your background, and then we'll jump into today's conversation. Renee Vaslios is a Dutch-American agricultural economist who has spent over 15 years in the production agricultural space. Her work experience includes time spent with the USDA. She has started her own consultancy to help investors and ag tech companies, and she spent nearly a decade with John Deere, much of that time in Beijing. Renee has recently joined the Nature Conservancy as their Agriculture Innovation Director. She will manage the TNC's investments in early-stage ag tech companies that will support regenerative agriculture production at scale. Boom, Renee! That is so fantastic. Congratulations on that new position. What an awesome evolution for you personally. What a win for them. Can you tell us a bit more about what you'll be doing at this newly appointed position at the Nature Conservancy?
Yeah, thank you so much, Aaron. I'm very excited about it. Basically, the idea is that we will be looking at soil health. So looking at companies that we think will help move the needle on driving soil health gains at scale. We're still working out all of the details, but we'll be building a portfolio of companies that we think will help move the needle at scale. So it's a tremendously exciting opportunity. And the big picture mandate is to hopefully excite other investors about the opportunity that exists in this space for not only returns, but significant environmental impact as well.
Yeah, and a lot of the investments have been in ag tech, have been focused on the last mile delivery, some of the low-hanging fruit in things, but not really the structural change to things. And we've seen different types of capital in it, but you're really taking an NGO position here, but you're aggregating a bunch of different types of resources, and you're trying to tackle some of these big infrastructure problems, I mean, fundamental, almost line of demarcation of investing in soil as a way of instead of the, we're investing in the biology instead of the chemistry, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, traditionally what we've seen in the ag tech investor space is similar to other worlds. It starts in software. So there's been a lot of investment, as you suggest, in kind of software management systems. But we're hoping to get into some, to identify opportunities that go beyond that with the lens of soil health impact.
Cool. Well, we expect to see some great things in near future from you. That'll be, we'll keep the conversations going.
Great.
So, very good. Well, Renee, today I'm not only welcoming a young superstar as a co-host, but we're welcoming a young powerhouse guest too. For episode 91 of Sourcing Matters, we welcome the managing director and proprietor of Schlossgut Alt Matlitz, Benedict Boisel. Benedict, I know I butchered your family's estate name. I apologize for that. First of all, hello, welcome. Thanks for joining.
Hi, guys. Glad to be here. Thank you very much. And no problem with that. You know, I think that was spot on, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. It's like, I think one of the first times I met Benedict, by the way, Renee, I said, my last name's Niederhumann. He's like, yeah, I think you're saying that wrong. He's like, it's not the correct German pronunciation, right? So, hey, Benedict, thanks for joining us. You and I have been buddies for a long time. I wanted to share with our listening audience some of the great work that that you're up to. So, Renee, let's get to some brass tacks here. I want to give you a little explanation of what Benedict's up to here. So, through regenerative food production and forestry management, through hunting excursions and land stewardship initiatives, and through a royal bed and breakfast and restaurant, Benedict offers folks a unique destination and a unique experience that's dedicated to capturing and sharing the vitality found in nature's systems. Since Benedict has taken the reins in 2016 of this great estate located 1 hour east of Berlin, it's also become an ag tech innovation hotbed and an epicenter for testing and implementing regenerative natural resource management at scale. And then, Renee, this is what I really love about Benedict and getting to know him over these few years. He's diversifying and innovating on this grand German estate by investing in the future, a regenerative future which marries and harmonizes with natural systems for maximum benefit to humans, to the planet, and to all the co-inhabitants. So, Benedict, let's start in food production, if we could. Can you tell us a bit more what you're growing on the farm?
We are basically a grain company. Apart from that, let's say alfalfa, which is mainly for soil health requirements and a few more. So this was the situation then when I took over the business in the end of 2016. And because we have that immensely sandy soil, low nutrient soil, and immense low precipitation, the question really became, you know, how can we actually find solutions to, you know, better the soil, increase soil fertility, and how can we actually also look at the products themselves, you know, what other products can we actually grow in that environment? And since then, we've thought about that sort of excessively, tried a lot of things, and kind of now moving more and more into more products in form of meat, obviously, of chicken, of cattle, of eggs. We're looking to grow more legumes, and we will try to do that through a sort of a diverse mix, because as a large farm, you know, we are obviously sort of obliged to use large equipment, storage and so forth, but going into some of those products, you might want to start small on a small scale and then work your way up from that. You have to build a market and so forth. So I think these processes take a bit of time, and also we are always trying to look for entrepreneurs who actually have, you know, a passion for farming in maybe one of those special areas, and then bring that onto the farm and sort of combine that with things that we are doing. So see if there are certain synergies, which certainly there are. So it's really a matter of moving into different directions, and I mean, things obviously take some time. So I think we've laid the groundwork as such, but we're still obviously are grain dominated.
Sure. Well, can you give us an idea of how many acres you have currently in production? How big is the estate, and how much do you have in production?
Okay, basically, so we have around a total of 3,000 hectares, which is pretty much, I think, 6,000 acres, and a third of that is actually agricultural land that we use. And on that agricultural land, let's say a tenth of that is actually just like classical pasture, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And the rest is actually in agriculture production, of which, though, I think more and more we're looking at it in a way to find you know, a certain routine also in combination with grazing the cattle, of to say, how can I maybe take some of the production out of it and invest more into the soil health, and then have a lower percentage using a sort of agricultural main grain production, and have a stronger focus on actually feeding the soil biology and increasing soil fertility, and at the same time obviously having pasture for the cattle. So we have quite a lot of movement in that direction as well at the moment.
Okay, and I do want to return back to the food animal production and more in the cereals and some of the other areas that you're focused on. But I wanted to ask, I saw that more than a decade ago, your family committed to these practices that invest in soil health and regenerative nutrient cycling. Why did you make that decision as a family?
Especially my parents, that didn't actually come from agriculture with an agriculture background. I mean, I kind of grew up as a kid in the countryside, so I always had that immensely strong connection with nature, and you know, I think it really helped me not to like have been growing up as a farmer in the classical sense, because I think coming from the outside, having just an incredible passion for farming and having an incredible passion for animals and for nature, I think you have the chance to approach these kind of, let's say, yeah, not only emotions, but those kind of combinations and those kind of, let's say, the energy that there is when you actually turn to nature and look at nature and be inspired by nature instead of, you know, trying to squeeze the last bit of yield out of something or try to see how you can raise profits in some sort of sense. So I think that is really what triggered my emotions as well as my parents' emotions in the end of the day, just to be stewards of the land and to make it even more beautiful and to realize what potential lies, you know, in that, doing that, understanding the complex ecosystems, understanding, you know, how you can actually, grow the soil, produce highly nutrient-dense food, increase biodiversity, and funnily enough, by the end of the day, probably have a better profit, right? So I think it's really coming from the heart, I guess.
Thank you, Benedict. That was actually going to be my question. Over the 10 years, have you actually seen with this shift in focus greater returns? It sounds like maybe it's still playing out.
The biggest changes have probably happened within the last 2 years, I guess. Before that, I mean, we were already obviously doing ecological farming, and we were already, you know, looking at ways how we can incorporate more and more nice crops and cover crops and have obviously a very diverse crop rotation. But to go that step beyond, to look at, let's say, new methods to incorporate even more diverse rotations and even taking a step, you know, more towards looking at the soil and less looking at the potential grain yield, so to say. I think that was a transition we only started strongly in the last 2-3 years. So from that, I think from economic point of view, what I can already say is that we've reduced the producing costs by quite a bit, or maybe have had a transference in producing costs, production costs. So that is something that I can already see. I mean, we had a really bad drought last year. This year was also very, very challenging. So I think those kind of years, they kind of have the chance of throwing you back when it comes to building soil, because you know you can do whatever you want if you sow a cover crop, if you work with nurse crops, and if it doesn't rain for 2 months, for 3 months, for 4 months, then you know the soil is going to lie bare, and the heat is going to be incredible, and it's going to be incredible dry, and that obviously has severe effects on your soil, but. I mean, comparing where we've started, let's say 10 years ago, to where we are now, I think there's been a great transition. But the beautiful and cruel thing at the same time is that you need nature to at least at some point in time, you know, be on your side and support you with a little bit of better conditions, with a bit of rain. Because if it doesn't, then you know, it's a tough situation. You know, it's challenging. Yeah.
No, thank you for sharing that. And when nature does cooperate, and as you think about how you've shifted production, and you, Aaron had shared that you guys are looking at some early stage companies and entrepreneurs in this space, what do you think is missing to help you kind of reach your beyond food and beyond farm goals in terms of I don't know, technology or other solutions that you'd like to see?
Right. Well, I think with regard to, let's say, the technology side, especially in Germany, we've had kind of a slow start into the topic. I mean, we've been trying to, you know, motivate politics, motivate the large corporates. We did quite a few things to bring also the startups together, and obviously we had them here and work with them and have them give them experimental grants to try their products or services and so forth. But I think what we still need to get sort of more into is actually a complex combination, because on one side, you know, you have to develop a product that immediately helps the farmer, right? So you have to understand actually the needs of the farmer, and that product has to be in a way and also in a language that the farmer can immediately understand, that he can use directly. It has to have some sort of immediate payoff. It has to be probably also quite simple, so that he can easily incorporate into his processes. And to get to that point, I think you need to have an incredible understanding of the situation the farmer is in, the problem that he has, and also sort of the circularity of the business, so to say. That being said, especially in Germany, because we have, you know, very different regulations with regards to, you know, using this herbicide or using this fertilizer or whatever it is, from county to county, that there is hardly like the one fits all situation, and that means Germany is not one large market. It's rather a few small markets which are kind of similar but not similar. So I think it's quite a difficult market. At the same time, there's too few startups in the space, I think, who are looking for, you know, the large bet, so to say. So what's really going to be transformative in the industry? And then at the same time, I think when it comes to the capital side, we've had a very slow start and let's say movement, interest of venture capital funds, as well as the Germans corporates, because I think they have been watching this space for quite some time, but there is just not that many people in Germany who have that sort of background in agriculture, who have the experience of, you know, innovating in agriculture, to growing startups. It's a combination that's not so often there. So and this is only starting right now. So I think for startups it has been quite difficult to, you know, to get going and to realize what you actually need in order to be successful in the space. And I think from our point of view, it's always starting with a farmer, right? Like, you need to understand the problem of the farmer, and then find a solution, and not the other way around. Have a solution and then think, well, what kind of problem could I solve for a farmer? And I think this has been the case for quite some time.
And also, it's not unique to the agriculture space,
this
early stage churn. Well, actually, I wanted to ask you specifically, so you mentioned kind of chemical inputs as one area that are really stifled by local regulation. But what about in the way of farming equipment? Do you have your equipment needs for your more biodiverse farming operation?
That's a good question. I actually discussed this today with someone in Berlin. We had a meeting from our ministry who just initiated an expert group for digital farming in Germany, and it was all the well respected professors from different research facilities, and we had that discussion. And we also said, as you said in your introduction, you know, that they're all starting kind of with the easy way in on software products and so forth. And when it comes to actually manufacture, I mean, it's a long road. You need even more capital. You need to test it. You need to do so many more things. So it will always require a bit more capital and require more time. So I think from that side, it has been quite slow, even slower, I guess. That being said, I think this is really a huge potential that the whole industry, and even from my view, what I can see in the rest of the world, has not so much has happened yet. And I think it's directly or exactly where we need to move into, to have those different kind of, you know, agricultural manufacture equipment, machines, and obviously robotic and small autonomous units are one part of it. But multifunctional land use model will require quite special, let's say, also multifunctional use equipment, and that starts with, you know, planting, that starts you know, with pruning, that goes from so many aspects and so many different angles. And I think the overall understanding that this will be such a huge part of the future, or this must be such a big part of the future, is not there yet. I think there's just too many people still, you know, in the, let's say, old paradigm thinking of agriculture and working with land. And I think, you know, that regenerative idea, that regenerative understanding of using land, working with land, I think that has to, you know, be brought into the minds of people. And I always like to think of one situation where we often here on the farm also do workshops. So we bring together different interest groups where we see, you know, there is some potential of them to meet, and there is some potential of them to work together. And the things that you see there, they just show you so much about, you know, that whole farming industry, if you want. Basically, the other day we had some guys from a very well-respected research, not research, but like a manufacturing. So we do these workshops where we bring in different guys and different groups with different backgrounds. For example, we had a team from a university that is developing prototypes for, let's say, different uses of agriculture equipment. And the other side, we had invited a couple of farmers, and these were conventional farmers, ecological farmers, small farms, large farms. And in the beginning, you know, we had them, the researchers on one side and the farmers on the other side, like at prom night, right? And they were afraid to kind of talk to each other. And then, you know, I was moderating that, and I was trying to get them talking and to have a conversation about sort of what are the needs of the farmers and how can the researchers maybe, you know, change the prototypes or have different use cases. And then when the researchers asked the farmer, so what is going wrong in your usual production, they will always say, well, nothing. But once the researcher then explains, well, you know, what do you do if you have a cover crop standing there and you want to maybe plant, you know, the next seed after mulching the cover plant? How many steps does that involve? And only when you make, let's say, the farmer understand the way the researcher thinks, and vice versa, make the farmer and make the researcher understand how the farmer thinks, suddenly, you know, you have that, you build that connection between those two groups, and then suddenly you have so much energy going back and forth, because for the first time in their life, so to say, they have the chance to actually to speak to people who they often think about and that are so incremental to, you know, the kind of tools that are being offered to them. So in the end of the day, also like prom night, they basically sit on each other's laps and you have to go like in between and like drag them out away from each other. Because they're so into that you know, that talk and exchanging ideas. And I think that's so crucial. What we need to do so much more is also to show people, especially young people, but also, you know, experienced professionals from the industry, those kind of understanding from, let's say, natural processes, regenerative, you know, complex, interacting, solutions. And I think that is really a huge part of what we are trying to do here in the estate as well.
Well, first of all, it sounds like you had an interesting prom night.
Yes, very much so.
Let me come back to this and say, hey, you talked about multifunctional land use models, and it's a new operating system, right? And we need new tools, as you talked about. And I mean, the truth of the matter is that we've just codified these principles of regenerative. And you know, you had mentioned, Benedict, one of the methods you obviously implement there is cover crops. Renee Benedict's actually who introduced me originally to Gabe Brown. So maybe, Benedict, if you could share with our listening audience some of Gabe's five principles of regenerative that you enact on your land.
Basically, so the main principles of you know, regenerative agriculture and the ones that Gabe Brown also mentions is pretty much, you know, as less or as little disturbance of the soil that you can possibly work with. So that on the one side is using, let's say, chemicals, but also if it's mechanical disturbance. I think that is a crucial point. The second really important one is, I think, to keep the soil covered at all times. So, using a regime from nurse crops, from cover crops, to really have you know, that armor, that protection from soil, from wind, and so forth. Then having you know, having living roots in the soil for a long time, I think, is very critical as well. And of course, biodiversity. And I think there is also quite a crucial part, you know, the biodiversity of plants, obviously, but also of animals. And you know, I think that is something that, you know, we bring to more attention in the whole the debate with others, because there's so much energy going into, you know, eating less meat, which obviously the claim in itself is correct, but often it is being, you know, spoken out that, you know, the cow is a climate killer, but you know, it's really nothing like that. It's never the cow, you know, it's the wrong system. It's not the cow, so to say. So, you know, using cows on pasture, on cover crops, on nurse crops, in a sort of holistic management way, we've actually seen that, you know, you can do some quite the opposite. And I think what is so interesting about, you know, what Gabe Brown says, what Joel Salatin says, what Ernst Goetsch says, what Alan Savory say, you know, these guys come from different places, come from different situations, work with different climates and so forth, have different concepts as well. But all of them agree basically on the same kind of principles that I have just, you know, just mentioned. And funnily enough, all of them also say, look, we don't have the answer, you know, we cannot tell you what to do. This is basically what we have done on our place, and this is how, you know, we've been successful with it. But you have to find, you know, your own situation and your own solution. And I think that is so interesting, because this is exactly what it's about. You know, you have to find those kind of solutions for yourself. I mean, and this is basically what we've been doing in the last years as well. When we plant trees, which we've done quite like many thousands, we plant the highest biodiversity that we can possibly get our hands on, because already within the first 2 years, we can see such a huge difference between different species of trees. So if I have a plum, or if I choose, let's say, a plum in an agroforestry system, then I can see amazing changes and differences between each plant variety, right? Plum variety. So I think, moving from, you know, that idea of you adhering to a certain standardized system where you use certain inputs to gain a certain yield or a certain outcome, I think we have to move back to, you know, thinking about regional solutions, thinking about, you know, the differences that each of us have on their land, and finding solutions that, you know, fit perfectly to the situation that we're in. And I think understanding that, you know, you can only find those solutions yourself, I think that's a crucial part. And it's amazing to get young people into farming as well, because this is what is fascinating about farming. You know, it is incredibly challenging, and it's complex, and you need to have so many you know, aspects in your mind and you have to work with. I think, yeah, that is really a crucial part of how we can bring, you know, the passion and love for farming back into the young generation.
So speaking of partners, so bringing in the young farmers on the production side, but I'd also love to hear your thoughts about how the market is supporting your more biodiverse operation in terms of your different varieties of plums and other agroforestry solutions, or some of the crops that you're developing.
Yeah, that's actually a good question. It's an important one. I mean, you obviously, you know, marketing is the number one key, and I think that is something that many of us or many of people who are looking into the farming space are not maybe that strong on, or not that keen on, or maybe it's just not something that they like to do so much. But you need to, you know, find people who you can, first of all, speak directly to. So you need to know the name of your customer, and you need to be able to tell them your story. So why are you doing this? Why is it beneficial? Why is it beneficial for them? Why is it beneficial to, you know, the soil, the ecosystem? And through that story, make him understand that it's worth, you know, paying a certain price, or Joel Zelatin would say, to invest in a certain product. because it's always going to be a bit more expensive, right? You know, there's still a lot of education that has to be done, and there's still a lot of, let's say, trust that you have to win. But finding ways to, you know, to tell that story and to bring those emotion to people, I think that is something that you have to, you know, get used to. But I think once you do, they will never, you know, leave you. I think because this is something that we've been experiencing here as well. And we had within the last, let's say, 2, 3, 4 months, we had about 200 to 300 visitors. And these people often come with not a lot of knowledge about farming, or they come, you know, with certain ideas that might be even a bit negative, or they are vegan, or they are, you know, they have all kinds of ideas. And then they come here, they visit the place, they see, you know, the animals, they see the different sort of systems interacting with grain production and some trees and so forth. And they see so many like young people being around. And I think that really triggers something in them, because, you know, we all love kind of to eat, like it's so fundamental, and to experience that in the outside, in a sort of in the nature, and to just to be there and to see it and to ask questions and to sort of kind of get involved with it, I think that triggers so many, you know, emotions. And then people, they have been so open and eager to experience it. And I think this has been such a huge, I'd say, aspect to our sort of marketing, just having people here and experiencing it. I think that is really quite crucial. And I think once they've done that, you know, they will be able and willing to pay a higher price. That being said, it's still, you know, a tough road until you can have a reliable source of people who are willing to do that. I think that is certainly the case. But it's incredibly satisfying to see those people, you know, and even the ones that have some sort of negative views, or who you know, think a living cow on the pasture is bad for the climate. You know, once you tell them and you make them realize and experience it, you know, they leave as a bit of a, you know, changed person. They are so positive about it. They're like, wow, yeah, that's amazing. I never knew that. That's great. You know, when can I come back? When I want to bring my kids. And I think, you know, after a hard day of work, if you have that kind of experience with people, that's just really rewarding, I guess.
That's right. It's not the cow, it's the how, right? And when done right, it marries so well with natural order. Benedict, when I started the intro to the conversation, I had mentioned some things that happen on your land and estate, from production of cereals and food animals, and a B&B and a restaurant, and hunting events, and basically excursions into nature. Could you spend a few minutes just giving us a bit of the lineage of your land and estate?
Right, sure. So basically, the family of my step-grandfather owned the land for nearly 300 years. And towards the end of the Second World War, my step-grandfather flew in 1945 with his mother and a couple of people around the villages here, and some of the horses, and then they went towards the west. And when the war came down, my step-grandfather came here by accident, actually, and was approached by the old LPG director, so the publicly owned farming operation was bankrupt. And so he said, please, if you can, please come back to the village and start to rebuild it again. So my step-grandfather approached my parents and basically asked them if they would be willing to come back to Martlitz and rebuild the estate. The connection with my step-grandfather and my family is basically my step-grandfather married my father's mother when he was 5. So my father always grew up with my step-grandfather as his father figure, so to say. And for me, it was always my grandfather. So emotionally, we are one family. But let's say if you would compare the bloodlines, we wouldn't be. Anyway, so that's really how, you know, we started building this as our home. My mother was actually the first one that came here pretty much around 2000, 2001, to live here and to rebuild sort of the agricultural operation, the forest operation, and started, you know, renovating the first one or two houses. And my father then continued to work in Hamburg, was still, you know, going back and forth, and then started coming here by the end of 2010, 2011, I think. And, you know, and basically this kind of project, you know, it never ended. And those first 10 years, you know, we were just concerned with buying back the land. And during the time of the GDR, the land was, you know, dispersed so in so many little bits and given to so many different people that, you know, it was kind of a puzzle that you had to, you know, build up again and buy one piece of land and another piece of land and another piece of land until you could actually realize that this dream of rebuilding the whole estate, you know, in the old kind of way could actually come true. And that took about 10, 15 years, I guess. And from there, we gradually moved on and were able luckily be able to buy some more land and buy some more forest. And eventually the old park was part of it as well, and the old manor house and then became part of it as well. So it is a moving target. It's a project that never ends. You know, if you finish on one side, you can start on the other. I think that's the kind of life that you live here on the countryside, that I guess you have to live. And the idea was always to think about, you know, how can we make the things that are kind of challenging and kind of dangerous to us, how can we change them, turn them around to make them something that we actually can, you know, work with and that can actually give us more opportunities than being a threat. And I think, you know, finding solutions to you know, caring for the land, working with the land, in face of, let's say, you know, fluctuating climates, in face of harder droughts, and this incredibly sandy soil here, I think has been really the key for us. Because the most interesting part is that if we find, let's say, multifunctional land use models here, and if we can prove that they're ecological, economic, and socially beneficial, then if they work in our incredibly tough environments, you know, they can work anywhere. And I think that's really something that has triggered so much of our, I think, motivation and inspiration of bringing, you know, people from all over the world here to show and to work with us and to show us different things, and to see that, you know, if their kind of concepts even work here. And so far, it doesn't look so bad. So keep the fingers crossed, I guess.
That's good stuff. I think there's a macro trend, Renee, happening towards the idea of place. Place matters, our connection to land, our connection to where we're from. And Benedict, you eloquently defined that. In fact, I think you're reading my question sheet way over there from Germany, as my last question for you was going to be, what's your view in the future? But you nailed that already. So I thank you for that. And what I would do is encourage our listeners to go to the website. We'll put a link to that. And watch your beautiful videos. They're thought-provoking, they're engaging, and they're very masterfully done to get people immersed into this feeling of nature. Renee, final thoughts?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you so much, Benedict, for sharing about you and your family's effort to go beyond land stewardship. I think that there's growing momentum around just what the tremendous opportunity is there. And also, we didn't mention it, but I think that... what's also exciting that's happening now is you're bringing another lens to this. What I read from your background is you have investor experience in non-agriculture. And I think the more we bring these outside thinkers and experiences back to agriculture, wonderful things are going to continue to happen. I think you're just a fantastic example of that. And then also really appreciate your efforts to foster the agriculture startup community where you are. I know that's exactly the space the Nature Conservancy is looking at. And maybe there's the chance for us to look at something together if you identify something that's really making a difference and helping you to work with your soil and continual land stewardship, beyond stewardship efforts. So thank you.
Yes, my pleasure. And you know, I think this is really the key. This is what I'm trying to, with my my small possibilities, but try to move founders and entrepreneurs more and more into it, to make them realize and say, look, if you are well educated, if you have the power to found a business, to create something new, then look at nature, be inspired by the possibilities nature gives you, and please solve some of those huge problems that we have, because there's so many problems, so many situations that we will face in the future, and finding solutions for those and finding technical solutions for those are incredibly, not only important, but incredibly demanding. And the potential of those is something that can really make a difference. So I think having young people around and showing them what potential you can have by actually doing good for an ecosystem, doing good for others, doing good for the planet, I think that is really where we're moving into right now. And I'm so hopeful actually with regards to how we're gonna let's say found businesses and create that whole momentum about, on one side, the sort of regenerative thought of saying, okay, our aim has to be, our vision has to be to regenerate with business models, and then in combination with that, finding technology to do that and understanding nature better and using nature and more responsibility. So I'm really excited. I think the next 10, 15, 20, 30 years, especially in agriculture, will just be incredible. It's such an amazing space, and I think more and more and more people are moving into it. And I think we have a bright future in front of us. Obviously, it's going to be challenging, and there's going to be a lot of problems as well. But in the end of the day, I think it's all going to be quite fantastic, I hope.
Well, great stuff. And it sounds like you both were describing a Sourcing Matters field trip to Germany, where we have to go see this in person, right, Renee? I think that's the key.
I think that's definitely on the agenda.
Absolutely. Hey, Renee, thank you so much for taking the time to join as co-host. Always insightful, always adding incredible value. So thanks for taking the time in a busy schedule.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. And Benedict, man, always learn something new. I learned a great deal. I know our listening audience will as well. Renee, awesome.
Thank you
stuff.
Very much, Benedict.
Yeah, thank you guys. That was wonderful. Always happy to talk. And you guys are doing such an incredible work. I mean, it's really inspiring to hear, all those people you brought on the show. And I think, there's so many people actually so grateful for the job you're doing. And it's great to be here, and very much looking forward to the German field trip.
Very good. Well, until next time, thanks again.